Hey everyone, welcome to the LLB podcast. My name is Johnny Nguyen and I'm your host. Today I wanted to talk to you about how to add value as a junior, and I've brought in someone that I've read an amazing LinkedIn article of and has actually helped me in my process along the way. I've got Jason Feng here. Jason's currently a construction lawyer at Vincent Mason's, but I'll let Jason do the introducing here. Take it away, Jason.
Thanks, Johnny. Like Johnny said, my name is Jason. I'm currently a construction lawyer at Vincent Mason's, but I guess I came into law with an understanding that I wasn't going to be the most technically competent, you know, highest mark scorer. So I tried to supplement all of that with a lot of work experience. So I've worked in in-house environments, government environments, private practice, community legal centers. And over all this time, I've just been really focused on learning all the practical elements of law, or the non-technical parts that actually are super important to helping junior lawyers especially excel in the first few years of their career. So hopefully I'm able to share some of the tips that I've learned along the way.
100%. So, I mean, law school definitely does not prepare you for any of those practical elements. And I guess this video is really intended to help clerkship. I started the ship and I just kept going, but clerks, you were starting the clerkship recently and potentially worried about anything. So to sort of start us off here, Jason, I know that your article mentions taking instructions as something that's a bit of an art form. Can you take us through, I guess, that process? What do you do to take good instructions?
Yeah, I guess with the instruction side of things, you know, coming into a clerkship, you're not really sure about all the expectations they have on you and what exactly you're meant to be doing. But one of the really important things that you can do straight away that will set your head off other people who may not have thought about this as much is really how to take proper instructions from the people that you're actually working with. So I guess there's really four things that I've kind of broken down that you should be listing in your instructions. The first thing is the background. So ask about who you're acting for, any facts you should know, any key documents or emails you should be looking at, and get a flavor of, you know, what exactly you're going to be acting for. The next is deliverables. Understand what exactly your colleague needs from you, because sometimes you might think it's a full memo or research email, but really sometimes it might just be a quick chat, or they might just want some markups to a document. And then the next is really timing and budget. And this is kind of the things that maybe you won't think about when you're starting law, but are actually important to your colleagues who are in this. So things like, when does your colleague really need it to review? So, you know, if they need it, in a day, if they need it in a day to actually send out to client on that day, don't wait until the end of the day and throw them a grenade and they have to stay back. You know, get an idea of how long you actually have to send that stuff to them. And then also how much time exactly that they expect you to take to do this task, and what the budget is for your time. Again, it's not fully your responsibility, but just showing that you're kind of aware of this stuff really does help in the beginning. And then the last thing is just really matter number, just a place to save your documents and bill your time. And I think once you kind of take down these four things, what's really I've found helpful is to be able to read back and confirm those instructions. And that's really an opportunity for you to clarify anything that doesn't make sense to you. And I know many times when I wasn't doing this, I would just kind of pretend that I would, you know, taking perfect notes all the time and just hope I'd figure it out afterwards, because I was scared to ask questions, right? It's really intimidating to kind of show that you didn't get everything perfect the first time. But it's super helpful. Just read it back, confirm the instructions. You'll find that they don't expect you to do it perfectly as long as you clarify with them. And then the last step after you do all that is make sure that you communicate and update your colleague in case anything changes. We know that things happen in the workplace that you're not fully in control of. So if there's a conflicting deadline, if you've hit a dead end, if there's new information or documents that you've uncovered that they initially didn't think about that changes things, then let them know immediately. Then they can revise deadlines, revise timing, revise what you're actually doing. So I think all of these things, you can see it's really like the how to do these things, but they don't teach you that in law school. And I think this is kind of the important thing about having these kind of practical guides in the workplace, because you can try to figure it out through personal experience or through making mistakes and correcting it and trial and error. But I think it's simple enough for people, especially like someone in my position, to actually be able to set out these sort of guides for the people coming in after.
Yeah, it makes sense. And Jason, I wanted to touch in on one of the things you mentioned. You mentioned even when you started, you were scared of asking questions, and I completely relate to that. I felt pretty scared asking questions during my clerkship. Can we sort of get an understanding of, since you've moved on from your clerkship, how do you sort of like learn more about the expectations of what clerks are actually meant to know, be able to do, etc.? Like, I know clerks coming in right now probably have no idea often what's expected of them. So what's the standard here?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that when you come in as a clerk, you need to almost be technically perfect. You need to show that you can do the work well. You need to show that you can actually, you know, exceed and be better than what they expect of you. And I think that's just kind of a messed up view of expectations of someone who's, you know, not even finished law school yet, fourth year law student coming in. We don't expect you to write a perfect research memo or perfect advice or anything like that. I think the most valuable thing that when I was coming in that I've been told from people more senior to me, and what I'm realizing with the new clerks and grads that are coming through after me, is that if you just come in with a bit of a learning mentality, in the sense that, okay, I know I'm going to make some mistakes, but I'm going to learn from those mistakes, and I'm not going to make those mistakes more than, you know, once or twice, right? I'm going to actually develop, and I'm actually interested in developing a career in this area. I think that's, you know, broadly speaking, the most valuable part. And like I touched on, you know, it's really the non-technical side of things that really help you excel in the first few years, because you're going to be learning those technical things along the way, right? You're going to be exposed to cases and facts and all of that actually teach you how to do your job and deliver a perfect, like technically perfect legal product. But I think the three other things that I would kind of highlight for you is work ethic, teamwork, and a problem-solving approach. And just to give you a bit of a flavor of what that kind of looks like, because there's a misunderstanding for things like work ethic, that you just need to be at work all the time and show people that you're willing to work around the clock and burn yourself out and blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's really right. I think the things that you show in your clerkship that demonstrate good work ethic is more like discipline in the task that you're doing. So what I mean is, let's say they give you a bunch of documents and they ask you a question relating to those documents. Having the discipline to look through each and every one of those and really think about it and ask some questions about it is an example of work ethic. Going into a contract and not just looking at the clause they ask you, but also the cross references to all those clauses in the contract, you know, broader than just your task, is a demonstration of work ethic. Really, it's just you're in a position to do all the things that you're able to do, right? And you might underestimate what exactly you're able to do, but it's things like proper formatting, spell checking, printing and packaging documents in an email, attaching relevant cases to your research memos, looking up the addresses for meetings and taking responsibility for, you know, making sure the telecom goes well on a technical side of things. Those are examples of work. And just the other two that I'll touch on real quickly.
The work ethic point.
Yeah.
I think that one really important thing to recognize is sort of how this ties in with that point about having a learning mindset. I think that one thing I felt pressure with as a clerk was that I came in with this sort of expectation that I just needed to pump out work as quickly as possible, that I need to complete work quickly. And as you went through that list, you know, you're talking about like checking the cross references, basically like dotting the I's, crossing the T's, doing work properly. I eventually realized that, you know, it was probably better for everyone involved if I did take that time to slow down a little and to actually take the process to learn what I needed to do. Again, asking those questions during instructions and taking the time to do proper work.
Yeah, no, and I think that's completely right, because, you know, I even came in with this mindset a bit, right? Like, if I'm the guy that can shoot out 10 pieces of work for four different people in one day, then that's going to make me look good. But what I kind of found with that approach is, you may not be able to do the best quality work for all those people that you're helping, and in the process actually create a bit more work for them than, you know, what you could have done by doing all these other things if you didn't take on that workload. So being realistic with your time and doing things properly is way better than doing things fast. And I think I know we both know this, right? Like where if you have someone who asks you to do something in 2 hours and you're rushing it out, many times if you say to them, hey, I've done the bulk of it, but I just want to take an extra 30 minutes or an hour to tie off some of these knots or do another proper proofread, they'll give you that time because that's ultimately what they're looking for. They're looking for you to be able to do everything within your power to deliver good work product. Yeah, and just really quickly, the last 2 points, teamwork, simple things. Let people know if you have capacity. Don't just sit around twiddling your thumbs. It's kind of tempting to think that they should be responsible for giving you work, and if they don't give you work, then just sit around and wait for work. But again, just be a little proactive about that. And also the other point, you know, communicate conflicting deadlines as part of teamwork. It's important that everyone kind of knows what you're doing, and if there are things that are conflicting and making your work progress and work quality not up to scratch, then you should be communicating that upfront. And then the last thing is that problem-solving approach. You know, don't be a person that comes into the room saying, hey, there's a problem, or I've identified 3 problems, and just hand it over to them, right? You want to be that person that goes to your colleague and says, hey, I've spotted these problems, but I've thought about potential solutions, and this is what I can do. What do you think about this? If you're happy to, I'm willing to take that extra step. That's way more valuable. That doesn't pass a problem from you to them. And that's where you're adding a lot more value and showing that you're really proactive in this sort of sense. So those are kind of what I think clerks should be expecting or should be trying to demonstrate, like focusing on demonstrating. Obviously, if you can do technically perfect work, go for it, but try not to focus on that as the only thing.
All right, don't mess up your work on purpose. But I guess touching on 2 things you mentioned there, across all of like what you've said so far, I noticed the one big theme so far. It's this idea of just communicating properly, right? And I think like communication is often that one selection criteria you see in most jobs that you just think, I'm going to write something about that one time I spoke about something. But it's quite clear as you go through and actually start working, like, I know for me, communicating, like, sort of like keeping people updated was actually not that natural. Like, checking in the morning, checking in before you leave, updating them as things happen. Like, it's quite burdensome at times to actually constantly be thinking about the people that you actually owe obligations to. So I think that it's really something that clerks probably need to be paying more attention to rather than just treating it as a soft skill you sort of like answer on a selection criteria.
Yep. No, I completely agree. I think it is just taking that extra step and having it a bit more of a highlight in your mind that you're not working in a silo. Lawyers do not generally work in a silo. So make sure your team members are involved. Make sure they know what you're doing. Make sure you know what they're doing. And that just makes the whole experience a lot easier for everyone.
100%. And I guess touching on problem solving then, I think that, at least for me, problem solving was something I always wanted to do, but yet I think as a clerk, it was a little bit intimidating at times because sort of looking at that sort of structure you set out, right? Like you come in, you're like, there's this problem. I think there are these steps available. I feel like as a clerk, you always run that risk of potentially bringing up really dumb solutions. Again, you're scared of being not technically competent. But I think like what you said, right? Like I think if you took more of an empathetic approach to it, you'd realize that the people you bring the problem to, you don't want to sort of like just pass that grenade to them, just go, hey, it's not really my problem, I'll just pass this to you, right?
Yeah.
So where do you sort of trod that line though? Like I think there is sort of like a line to be treaded at some point in the sense that like problem solving to some extent if pushed too far is probably acting like a rogue, right? Like if you're taking steps to fix it on your own, there is a chance you might blow it up. So where do we tread this line here? How do clerks manage that?
Yeah, I think the issue is probably we're a bit hesitant when we're coming in with a solution that we're not completely sure about acting before we actually talk to anyone about it, right? And most times it can be solved. Don't be worried about your solution being a bit dumb, right? Coming in and actually being able to think about how do I fix a problem rather than, oh, I should hide what I might be thinking is a potential solution because it might be dumb. It's always a better approach to just bounce that idea off your colleague. And I think, you know, one of the biggest frustrations from more experienced lawyers is when someone comes into the room and just says, "Hi, I've got problems 1, 2, 3, 4. What do you want to do about it?" Because that's, you know, that's not your job. Your job as a lawyer is not a problem spotter. It's a problem solver, right? So coming in and at least developing that thinking muscle of, "Hi, this is how I would try to approach this problem," is already, you know, showing a level of proactivity and competence beyond what's already been expected from clerks, especially, or, you know, law students. So yeah, just don't be afraid. Bounce ideas. Worst comes to worst, they'll just say, "No, I don't think that'll work. Do this instead." But at least it shows your thinking, and that's what I think makes you look really good in their eyes.
I think to sort of chime in on that, there's also a selfish interest in the sense that when you tell them what your thinking is, it also gives them the ability to give you better feedback because they know how you're approaching it, what, like, you know, what your angle is and where you went wrong. Whereas if you just sort of like pass the problem, they have no idea what you've done up until that point, where you're going. So it's difficult for them to give you meaningful feedback to sort of take that learning up.
Yeah, no, completely. And I guess I don't want to also discount the fact that some people may not appreciate that honesty is the best policy when a problem comes up, because let's face it, we're all going to screw up. I have screwed up, you have screwed up when we're actually doing the work. And just overcoming that fear in the beginning of putting your hand up and saying to potentially very, very important partner, "Hi, I actually made a mistake." Overcoming that is super important and super hard, but you'll find that that is the best approach. You know, things in a law firm that you screw up can be fixed, but only if you actually tell people what the problem is. So I think, yeah, honesty and then having a bit of a thinking mindset towards what you can do, those are the two things that I would try to focus on when you're actually doing your clerkship program.
Definitely. I think that's a really good tip here. Now, I want to move on to another potentially problematic area for clerks. And I think that's, what do you do in meetings, right? I know that as a clerk, you've got to get dragged along to potentially client meetings with opposing, with your counsel and them meeting opposing counsel, etc. You're meeting a lot of people. And what do you do to sort of, what are you expected to do? What can you do? What should you be doing?
Yeah, I think a big part of clerkships and paralegaling and law grad programs is being dragged off to random meetings. And I think you kind of know in your head you're meant to take notes. But it's not just that, right? And it's not just about scribbling down a transcript of everything that's been said until your hand is sore. There's things that you can do in a meeting to add a bit more value than just that as well. So for example, at the beginning, make sure that the meeting is able to be run smoothly. So things like offer to send a calendar invite or reminder, circulate the email to everyone. Make sure that if it's a physical meeting, you know where the address is, you know how to get there, how much time it'll take to get there, and being able to knock on your supervisor's door and say, "Hey, by the way, meeting's in 30 minutes, it'll take about 15 minutes to get there, so is there anything else I should bring, blah, blah, blah." That's an important step. And on that note, you know, asking if there are documents that you should prepare in advance. So usually if it's like a big contract meeting or something like that, right? Should you, you know, ask them, "Hey, by the way, do you want me to bring however many copies of the contract physically printed, just for everyone to discuss?" You know, taking that step, just asking about what you can bring to the meeting. Taking really good notes, again, it's expected, but I think the extra step that I found helpful is just going through the notes afterwards and actually writing a little summary that I either tack at the top or the bottom, just kind of, so it's not just a running mess of stream of consciousness, what's being discussed. It's actually, okay, these are some action points, or this is something that I can look back on in half a year's time when they bring up this file note. I can say, okay, this is exactly what was being discussed without reading through pages of Drupal, right? And then just building on from that, offer to ask your colleague, "Hey, would it be helpful for me to circulate an action list or a summary of the meeting afterwards?" sometimes they'll say no, but sometimes they'll say, okay, great, you've got a good action list here with deadlines that everyone's meant to do by a certain time. Send an email around, that'll be helpful. So you can see it's a bit broader and a bit more meaty and a bit more valuable when you do these things in a meeting rather than just wait to be dragged along and take some notes and hopefully everything goes fine. I think we've both been in a situation, right, where we've been to meetings where we understood nothing that was going on. I've been to a 2-hour contract negotiation. I did not understand anything they were talking about. But I was taking notes the whole time, came out of it. They were like, hey, what did you understand? I didn't understand really any of it, but let me look through my notes. I'll try to prepare a bit of a summary anyway. And if we could actually go through that and you can explain some of these concepts to me, I'd actually find that really helpful. So just use the meetings also as an opportunity to learn, because all the lawyers that, you know, at least I've worked with, and I'm pretty sure the experience is universal, they'll be willing to actually take some time to explain things from the meeting that you didn't understand, as long as you give them like a proper, you know, framework for that discussion.
I mean, I think for them as well, half the time they don't even know what you don't know. Everything's
exactly,
eventually
yeah.
quite normal for them, yet for you, it's all this jargon. But I mean, I think practical examples of this, I found that I've realized, you know, I think meetings are really an opportunity where you can add value. But I think that with clerks coming in, at least for me, you sort of expect to want to try and add value in really technically competent ways again, right? Like you come in, you're like, hopefully I can slam a case out that'll change something, or I don't know, something along
that
line.
I'll say something really smart that makes the client say, that was really smart. Yeah. Like that's sort of expectation. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, a lot of the things you talk about, they're very practical things. And often if you just sort of like stepped into your partner's shoes, it'd be relatively easy to say, yeah, I would appreciate if the location was known, if we knew how long it took to get there. And I mean, in my current work right now, we have a daily update every morning at around 10 a.m. And since we're working internationally, we've got people in all across Asia sort of on the team as well. And the updates sort of affect everyone. There are action items for everyone. Yet, I sort of came into this meeting and eventually it became the norm that I was the one who just sort of like took notes of that meeting and circulated that action list, because at some point I asked my manager and I was like, hey, I know we've got a bunch of people in Vietnam and a bunch of people in Korea, etc. I know it's like 6 a.m. right now for them. You're probably not keen on updating them on everything and rehashing the whole meeting. Would it be helpful if I just started circulating these notes to them? And it's been a thing now. Like it's basically like part of the process now. Everyone's taking notes. They've shared it with other teams. It's not particularly huge, but it's value adding in a really small way.
Yeah, and I wouldn't underestimate that, right? Like, that's something within your control. That's something that no one was doing. That's something that is valuable to the people you're doing it for. And it's that example of, like, proactivity and taking those extra steps that does make you shine in the workplace. That does make you look really good and make you, honestly, a lot more comfortable when you're actually doing things that people are saying, hey, that was a good idea. Let's go with that. So I think just continuing that thinking, it's just, you know, don't feel worried about proposing to change the way that things are being done right now. It does actually at least get people thinking, or at the very best, improve the way that things are being done.
Sure. Well, to sort of like shift gears a little here. Now, I know that clerks in Sydney are still going into the office, but I know that clerks in Victoria or across Melbourne, they're doing it virtually. Now, how do we sort of like look back over these sorts of things? I know a lot of the advice is still applicable. I think, you know, say meetings, finding the location might not be so much as relevant anymore, but taking notes, sending the calendar invite might be. So where are the big changes you think are to your advice in terms of a virtual environment and a virtual clerkship? How does the game change here?
Yeah, and I guess, so I wrote my guide in February of this year. So before all of this COVID craziness, right? And it is actually important to kind of reflect on how that changes now that we do have a lot more remote working. I would say there's probably three things that I want to kind of highlight for especially new lawyers. It'll be communication, what to do in virtual meetings now, and just being able to actually embrace flexibility in your working life. So I think those three things are super important. I want to get into it a bit more, right? Like communication, one of the things that I didn't quite appreciate as much when I started working remotely was how beneficial it was to actually be in a workplace where, you know, you could go and meet a senior lawyer over in the break room and have a chat about, oh, by the way, I'm doing this for that case that we were talking about. Here's a quick update, just off the cuff. And everyone's kind of updated that way in a casual way. You don't really have that in a remote environment, right? So, like we said, communication is super important, but just taking those extra steps to say, hey, by the way, can we schedule in a 15-minute meeting or a 30-minute meeting in a time, like I'll find a spot in your calendar to actually put in that meeting where we can discuss blah, blah, blah. Or if you have some issues that pop up while you're doing work, usually I would be able to go in and say, hey, by the way, I was doing that task you gave me, but I just spotted some of these things that looked a little bit weird to me. I didn't have that benefit really anymore, right? So some of the issues that came up, even for me, was, I actually raised that issue a lot later than I would have, right? I raised that at the end of the task in the cover email saying, here's the task done, but by the way, these are some things I spotted. And that gave less time to actually work through those issues or for them to tell me if it wasn't a problem. So I think just taking that kind of real-time approach to virtual working, understanding that you do not have access to that casual communication anymore on a day-to-day basis, and trying to schedule time so that you can raise issues or you can give someone a call or you can send someone a message if something pops up. That's probably the biggest change I've found in working in a virtual environment. Is that kind of what you've been picking up as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, I found that, so I started, I think, two different jobs, while lockdown was happening. And I've generally found that to be true. So I know, for example, I had IT issues in the first job that lasted like a week. And I feel like that would have normally been maybe like a half day issue. Bring it up to IT, they'll fix it. But
yeah,
I mean, the back and forth was very much a schedule in with IT. They take a look at it, they tell you something, and then you give it a go, you schedule in again. So I think that communication has become a lot more intentional, right? I think that opportunity for a quick check-in isn't there anymore. But at the same time, in my second job at least, I found that the use of things like Microsoft Teams or other ways to chat, Google Chat, etc., bridge that gap to some extent, but there are also, I think, a lot of pitfalls with having a chat available to sort of spam your supervisors with as well.
Yeah, it is a tough balance to strike, but I think I would probably err on the side of trying to communicate more rather than less. And they'll tell you if they're busy, right? They'll just say, no, I can't make that meeting, can we do another time instead? But being the one to actually drive that process, because, you know, generally the people who are more senior are busier, have less time to think about these things. So if you're driving the process, it makes it more likely, it makes it easier for them to follow along. Then I think there's real value in doing that. And I guess, you know, the next point is virtual meetings. We have a lot more virtual meetings now than ever before. I haven't even really had a telecon for ages. It's all Microsoft Teams with VCs, blah, 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 right? So you're right, some of that advice with the physical meetings, like how, where to go, blah, 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 look on the map, how long it'll take to travel, that's out the door. But there's still things that you can help in that respect. And, you know, being someone who sets up those virtual meetings, being someone who looks at how Microsoft Teams works, what those features are, what you can do as the host, you know, if you need to make a breakout room, blah, blah, blah. Being able to handle the technical side of those things and making sure everyone gets the right link to this meeting, making sure if it needs to be recorded, it is recorded and you can access that recording. Those are still things that you can do. It's within your power to add value to that virtual meeting. And let's be honest, like a lot of the senior lawyers, they don't know how to do those technical things. This is an area where they'll rely on your technical skills to actually make sure things go smoothly. So just take advantage of you being actually an authority in that sense for these virtual meetings. It's really a plus for you as well as a younger lawyer.
I think that point on, you've got to mention just being an authority on that point. And I know we haven't spoken about it today, but anyone who's curious on that point should probably check out Jason's article. It'll be linked everywhere, you know, other in the comments, etc. So that's an interesting point. Probably not the most relevant for clerkships today, but just a little plug there.
Yeah. And like you said, happy for anyone to check that out. It comes with some examples of what you can do and what people have done to, I guess, excel a bit more in the job and take responsibility for things. I'd highly recommend that. But like I said, the clerkships are like 3 months. Don't focus too much on this sort of stuff. If you're demonstrating the other points and the soft skills that we kind of talked about, that's really the primary thing. And I guess I don't want to just say, you know, these are all the things that clerks should be evaluated by, blah, blah, blah. I think there's also a real opportunity with these virtual environments and virtual workplaces to take advantage of as a junior lawyer, as a clerk, and especially about the embracing flexibility and the way that we're working. So, you know, for us coming out of uni or, you know, just being generally younger, we can work some, or we might prefer to work some really weird hours to, you know, like I don't mind picking up some work late at night if I manage to actually have dinner with parents, blah, 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 and restructure my work. Or, you know, I might hit the gym at lunchtime and that might push my day back a bit, but you know, it's that flexibility that I think COVID has really opened an opportunity for us in relation to. So, you know, you'll have your deadlines. Understand what your deadlines are. Understand how your partners and how your supervisors prefer to communicate with you and what times they're usually around. But don't be afraid to take that opportunity of arranging your life and your work life the way that you want to, because I think flexibility was really tough to get, I guess, in a real office environment, especially with late nights. And taking advantage of that flexibility, especially in relation to health, and again, a side product of that, you know, mental well-being is really important, because I don't know if you've experiences with some of your friends yet, probably not because you've just started like working in law, but I know, and I myself, you know, got really unfit just over time as I was working and not taking the time out of my work life to really focus on that part of my life. So you know, you don't want to suddenly be 4 years down the track and having gained 10 kilos or lost 10 kilos. So take advantage of that flexibility to really look out for yourself as well and not burn out before you actually get further into your career.
100%, that's super sage advice. And I guess that's probably a really good segue to a bigger picture question at this point about, at the end of the day, what should clerks sort of be looking at in evaluating their experience? What do they look for to, I guess, understand how law firms work and make their decisions?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked a lot about what you should be doing or you can be doing to make yourself look really good to your supervisors, to your colleagues, to your partners. But I do want to take that step back and look at the bigger picture of what you can actually appreciate and what you can actually assess your law firm on or your clerkship experience on. And I don't want to just focus on things like, you know, the type of work you're doing, the type of tasks you're doing, what clients are, whatever, your social events, blah, blah, blah. I think that's really still kind of a small picture approach. I think now, having spoken to a lot of experienced colleagues, what they want to think about is, you know, if you're coming fresh into a law firm or you've just started out, what are the lives of your colleagues actually like? And what are the lives of the partners actually like? You know, as you're developing, if those are your career goals, how are they living? Are they happy? Do you see them as role models for yourself? And are they actually living lifestyles that you can picture living? Because, you know, we all know the horror stories of very senior colleagues taking that 1 day or 2 days of vacation finally after killing themselves throughout the year and then going on a beach but having to work from their laptop anyway. So is that the sort of lifestyle that you can picture living? And if that's not the lifestyle, then why are they in that position? What are the things contributing to that sort of lifestyle? And can you actually kind of pivot yourself away from that? And really just think about, you know, from that holistic experience, is that somewhere you want to be 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the track? Because it's a long, long career. And I think when we're in that process of just looking at clerkships or how to get a law grad position or how to get that promotion, we kind of lose sight of this and we might end up in a position where we didn't really intend to. Is that kind of, what were your experiences in the clerkship? What were you looking at?
I guess for me, the clerkship experience was really more of an exploratory journey in regards to commercial law generally, because I didn't really come from a background where I knew what commercial law even was, to be honest. I did my first interview and I think they hit me with that, why commercial law? And I hit them with a really honest, I don't have an answer for you because I don't actually know what commercial law is, but part of the reason I'm here and what I did learn was generally what commercial law was about. So for me, I guess it's not too different, but it is a smaller picture in the sense that I was looking at whether or not I could see myself working on these sorts of matters in the long term. I wasn't necessarily looking at the whole picture in the sense of what you've talked about, the lifestyle and the people that are sort of your role models. But to some extent, I guess, similar on that track in the sense that I was trying to evaluate whether or not long term I would like to work in this law firm or a law firm in commercial law at all.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely fair. And, you know, don't completely neglect that smaller picture stuff. I just find that when we do start out, we ignore the big picture questions entirely. And I don't think that should be overlooked. And really, the other point that I'd make when you're actually evaluating your clerkship experience or reflecting on it is really just to actually remember your own struggles and what you had trouble with, how you overcame it, what were the processes, who was helpful to you, who wasn't helpful to you, because ultimately law is a mentoring profession, right? We all know the value of mentors, but to be an effective mentor later in your career, you need to kind of develop that empathy and that understanding of where people actually have issues when they're actually practicing, and think about how to make it easier for those people coming up after you, because you don't want to forget these struggles. You don't want to be in a position like 5-10 years down the track where you've forgotten what it's like to actually be a clerk or be a junior lawyer. And if you lose that empathy, that's when you have the risk of becoming that nightmare partner or that nightmare senior lawyer who is just expecting results but doesn't quite understand the struggles that you know, even they went through or you're going through. So really, it is such an advantage to go through issues right now, because if you take a long, long-term approach, you're going to be the one who best understands the people below you and is in the best position to actually help them come up after.
That's some real big picture stuff. I really enjoyed this last part of the conversation. I think it's definitely given me food for thought in the sense that you've taken a really long-term approach there, thinking about how even further down in your own career progression, that's the sort of thing you want to be able to retain and hold on to, understanding the struggle, and not really getting out of touch, I suppose. That's the core of it. So, I mean, thank you so much for everything so far. Now, I'm keen to sort of like get people in touch with you here. Now, I know that I mentioned that you wrote an article on LinkedIn. What are the ways that people can sort of keep up with your work? Where can they find you? How can they follow you?
Yeah, so I do write semi-regularly on LinkedIn, more of the short-term sort of short-form sort of advice stuff, really focused on the how-to of practicing law. So if you want to, you know, connect with me or follow me on LinkedIn, send me a message. That'd be great. Otherwise, I do run monthly webinars as well. really focused on these sorts of talks, as well as the stuff that's either not taught at law school, learned through mistakes or experience, or you know, giving you a bit of an access to the sides that they don't expose you to when you're coming up. So, for example, the last one we had was about what it's actually like to work in a legal tech, and not just on the surface level, but really getting into the nitty gritty of things like, you know, what's your salary like, what's the working culture, what are the pros and cons compared to being a proper lawyer, rather than just actually a legal tech vendor or working in that field. So if you want the link to that webinar, sign up as well. That's in my LinkedIn profile, just looking for featured stuff. But yeah, I'd love to actually have a chat with you or see if I can help you in any way as well.
Yeah, 100%. I've been to a couple of your webinars. I know the one you're talking about was, I think, with Minwoo Yim and I think
Anne Wong.
Yeah. And I mean, like, just name dropping here, but they are definitely some very big dogs on LinkedIn. I know that you, Daniel Lowe, these are like the kinds of people that we talk about in personal branding classes.
Yeah, well, it's a start, but really, yeah, the whole vibe of everyone you mentioned, I think we're all in a position where we can actually give back a bit now to the people who are below us or even above us or whatever. And all that we're really asking is that you learn from this, but also pay it forward when your time comes. So, yeah, happy to have a chat whenever anyone's free.
Awesome. Well, Jason, thanks very much for chatting today. And thank you for sharing all the advice. It's been fantastic.
No, all good. Thanks for sending us, John.